you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Lowe's knows home improvement. Lowe's, official sponsor for the 2024 NFL Draft.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On this episode of Newt's World, there's a religious zealotry to the woke left movement, not so long ago, imposing a moral framework on every aspect of life, was a conservative approach. It was the right who saw the world through a moral prism. And when the right was doing the moralizing, the left could be counted on to oppose them. But the tables have turned. In his new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, Fighting Back Against Progressives' War on Fun, Noah Rothman dives deeply into the realities of this provocative societal change, rooting out its origins and exploring how it threatens the ideals of freedom and personal fulfillment at the heart of the American experiment. This inclination towards meddlesomeness is nothing new in our history. And as he dissects this mounting aspect of the social justice movement, Rothman draws parallels to the zealotry that lends the new Puritanism its name. It is an impulse that judges and attacks its victims based on a narrow moral judgment that lacks subtlety or an appreciation for human complexity. Here to talk about his new book, I'm really pleased to welcome my guest, Noah Rothman. He is the associate editor of Commentary Magazine, author of Unjust, and an NBC News contributor. Noah, welcome, and thank you for joining me on Newt's World.
Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm curious, what led you to write this book?
I was miserable, to be frank. This is back in the late fall, winter of 2020. It's the height of the pandemic. We had just had the riots, and every institution in America had committed itself to reconceptualizing the founding as something rather terrible in all its subsequent emanations, as something you should be suspect of and hostile towards. And I'm sitting down with my wife and describing my misery. She asks, you know, what would you like to do if you could do anything? Well, I'd like to speak with people who are in institutions that I like. Working comics, sports broadcasters, chefs, you know, people who create entertainment for a living, screenwriters, and the like. No, I can't, because everything is political now. There is no escape from the politics that has infected even apolitical aspects of life, those things that should be outside the realm of politics properly understood. And she says that's the book, and it was.
So you're saying that even chefs end up being political?
Oh, and they'll tell you about how miserable they are about it. There's a fair amount of the third chapter on prudence that describes the extent to which food, not just preparation, but generally the pleasant atmospherics of dining have become a problem, that your meat consumption is making you into a burden on your family and your community and destroying the Eden into which you were conceived, that you should be consuming a lot more insects, not because they're good. In fact, good is beside the point, because you're contributing to a social value, and that sense of satisfaction should be sustenance enough. There are plenty of chefs who are getting out of this industry, not because they're no longer good at what they do or they've gotten bad reviews, because they no longer find their life's work fulfilling, in part because they can't do their life's work. They get up every morning consumed with the mission now before them, which is conducting politics, being political. And that's not what they signed up for. A lot of the people I spoke with are liberal, Democrats, wouldn't vote Republican if you paid them. But their enthusiasm for their life's work is being robbed of them, and they bitterly resent it.
What happened to them if they just ignored all that pressure and cooked what they wanted to?
So part of my book is an attempt to give them a permission structure to do just that. Most of the people who genuflect before the woke movement share its goals, share its objectives. And part of the reason why I organized this chapter by unimpeachable virtues, piety, prudence, austerity, the fear of God, temperance, and order, is because the mission in its abstract to which progressives adhere was objectively good. It is the way in which it is being pursued by its most zealous adherents that is the problem. A lot of these people share the idea and the importance of the progressive mission. That leaves them unable to, based on their social circles and the industries in which they inhabit, leaves them unable to just simply walk away, to ignore it. You can try, but there's a collective action problem here. The first to go is only the first to go, and they need a crowd behind them. And so the prescription that I try to offer here is to live your life in a carefree way, in a joyous way, to mock those who have made a spectacle of themselves, because you know it only takes a first couple of people to do it, and then you'll have a collective action behind them. And ultimately, to consume and to reward commercially those who are bucking this trend and create an incentive structure to continue to do so. So there's a set of prescriptions there. But right now, those who don't want to run afoul of this movement are quite frankly scared. There are real consequences for running afoul of it, especially if you don't have an institution backing you that is institutionally committed to free expression and the exploration of ideas that could perhaps offend the more puritanically inclined progressive.
Is this largely a big city problem? I mean, if you're a chef, are you under greater pressure in a New York or Chicago or Los Angeles than you would be in, you know, Des Moines or Birmingham?
Doubtlessly, but that is where the commanding heights of culture are located, right? This is a problem of the capture of these institutions and a spectacular act of piracy by a narrow band of committed progressives inclined towards Puritanism. I'm not talking about Democrats per se. I'm not talking about liberals, not even all progressives. It's hard to quantify, but it's a smallish band of very enthusiastic zealots who have captured these institutions and who are meting out a comeuppance against those who do not bend to their will. But they punch way above their weight. And they have managed to use the pseudo-authoritative language of critical studies departments on campuses to morally blackmail, intimidate, and capture institutions that are bigger than them, that have a broader mission statement, but they are all being subsumed into this one project, which is the advancement of the progressive mission. And it's the three legs of that stool: racial rapprochement, economic egalitarianism, and environmental protection. All of these things in the abstract are noble. It is when they become a religious conviction and are prosecuted with absolute zealotry that they become intolerable.
In the model you're building, just the actual reference to New Puritans, you're describing a kind of irreligious or quasi-religious movement, more than a political movement.
And it has elements of a secular faith. It mimics a secular faith. I depart slightly from some people in this field whom I admire quite a bit, Professor John McWhorter, Michael Crichton, all of whom I identified really sort of religious traits in this secular approach to life. But I maintain that it transcends the conduct of politics and religion in a way that mimics the Puritan experience, because Puritanism wasn't simply a religion. It wasn't congregationalism alone. It wasn't the management of the colonies. It was both of those things. It was a way of life. I prefer to describe it as a theory of social organization more so than a religion per se. It lacks what I think is a key element of any conduct of spirituality, which is a deism, something that can provide you with absolution and allow you to conduct yourself in a way that is without sin. There is no way to escape sin in this idea of the new puritanical conception of the environment in which we're in. The sin, the sinner, and the environment in which the sin are committed are all along the same continuum. You can't block them off because that tie your hand in this existential fight against a ubiquitous evil.
So historically, the concept of Puritanism was seen as something on the right. And it was some sense of imposing a set of values on people that was often unfair and that was often arbitrary. And you're suggesting, as a number of people have, that in fact that's been transferred in the moral fervor and the intensity that we used to identify with the right is now in many ways to be found on the left.
Yeah, and it's an absolute mystery as to how this happened. That's where I begin unpacking this, is that, yeah, it was traditionally a tendency to see in seemingly innocent cultural products nefarious influences that would corrupt you and degrade society as a whole was primarily a predilection on the right. Now, all of a sudden, on the left, we're treated to moral crusades that very much mimic that. Big entertainment companies introducing themes to products that de-emphasize the entertainment value of that, because that's actually rather trite. It has to serve a higher social purpose than mere entertainment. Comedians who are emphasizing the pain that someone had to experience so that you could enjoy something as frivolous as a punchline. Sports coverage. Sit down to ESPN and you'll be treated to long digressions about the lamentable state of racial dynamics in America. And when fans object, as they do often, they're explicitly admonished for putting their need for escapism over their duty to dwell on the world's miseries. Indeed, dwelling on the world's miseries seems to be the highest goal, even above and beyond the principle that, whatever the principle happens to be, that they're promoting at any given time. This is indeed a puritanical impulse. Scholars of Puritanism get a little frustrated when you conflate big P Puritans of the 1600s, 1700s with the kind of the Comstockery into which it evolved in the 19th century. And that's more what we think of when we think of stereotypes of prudish Puritans who wanted to remake the world anew. But that is where progressivism was birthed. It came to be in the heart of mainline Protestant New England, and it retains quite a lot of its characteristics. Among them, utopianism, a messianic approach to political organizing, and a fear of idleness. That which is idle is an empty vessel that can be filled up and will be filled with the influences that are working all around us, that are corrupting us and corrupting our society at large.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Lowe's knows home improvement. Lowe's, official sponsor for the 2024 NFL Draft.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
When I was a kid, they would say that idle hands are the devil's workshop. And it was that whole notion that, you know, if you don't stay busy and virtuous, the bad things will happen automatically. And it was sort of a hangover from the Puritan ethic. I've often wondered if Harvard and Yale had not been in New England, how different would things have been? Because the dynamic which led to abolitionism and led to a whole range of things comes straight out of the Puritan tradition, the Puritan passion for creating a city on the hill.
Absolutely. The Puritans get a bad rap. And I try to make that point frequently in this manuscript, that, as you say, they bequeathed us with some of the greatest gifts that Americans should be cherishing, the proto-democratic institutions that evolved into what became the Constitutional Convention, a really profound commitment to abolitionism, so committed that many prominent Puritan activists backed Mexico in the Mexican-American War, which is one of the reasons why their zealotry can be a bit grating in mixed company. And a social contract that left us with, so that you wouldn't have to depend on charity in your darkest hours. These are profoundly good things. And if that tradition hadn't arisen in New England and perhaps in the Mid-Atlantic, we might have a much more Catholic conception of virtue. We might have elevated social justice in a way that was muted in the early 1800s. So who knows? I mean, that's an interesting counterfactual. But along with this puritanical virtues comes puritanical zeal. The two things are intertwined. I don't think they can be separated. And the progressive tradition has its roots in puritanical soil. And progressives might not recognize that impulse in themselves, but that's vanity. And this book hopes to address that.
So you talk about the progressives' war on fun. I understand why in the religious tradition that was a serious component, because fun was inherently putting you in risk of sin and was taking your mind away from God and away from preparing for heaven. But why in the modern period have all of these folks decided that having fun is inherently dangerous?
Well, so if you replace the mission of creating a new Zion, which is not dissimilar from the mission of perfecting the human experience, if you believe it can be perfected, is this messianic mission towards remaking the world anew and certainly extirpating the sins that we inherited. One of the scholars who I quote very often in this manuscript, George McKenna, whose book, The Puritan Origins of American Patriotism, is one of the best scholarly works on how Puritanism has bequeathed us with all these political traditions, and identified a series of traits that are native to a typical Puritan. And the one I focus on is one that he called anxious introspection, which is the constant interrogation of yourself and the projection of inward insecurities on your external environment. And the manifestation in which this most frequently materializes is in a fear and mistrust of what we would understand to be really banal activities. They have embraced a narrower understanding of the origins of the United States, elevating its original sins to a place of prominence that would confuse and confound, as I think we would agree, the founding generation, because it is so outside the scope of what they understood to be its importance. But in indicting everything on the flimsiest of pretext around that, so when you have this anxious introspection and you project it onto environment, you can see how the activity of knitting and sewing are irreparably linked, coupled with the legacy of American slavery. It takes an initiated puritanical progressive to see that. But that's the kind of thing they can see. They can see that in fly fishing. They can see that in interior decorating, in gardening. And it is the conduct of, for example, the mistrust of holidays that I think is one of the many ways in which this particular tendency has really impossible to ignore links to the past. Because as Cotton Mather said, it isn't the holiday itself. It is the immodest behavior that the holiday encourages. Lewd drinking, excessive eating, displays of gluttony. And we see that in the way the modern Puritan does their best to ruin holidays. They admonish you to berate your relatives over the abject state in which the country and the world finds itself during this otherwise joyous time, because joy is beside the point. In fact, it's rather counterproductive to be joyous, particularly in such dire times in which we find ourselves. This anxious introspection typifies quite a lot of how the new Puritan navigates the world, which has become the enemy of joy itself.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here.
With the first pick in the NFL Draft.
Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Rocket Mortgage, official partner of the NFL Draft.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm very curious, when you think about the shutdowns and people being locked at home and all the different things that came out of the pandemic, to what extent do you think that accelerated or intensified or changed the move towards the new Puritanism?
Perhaps quite a bit, in a way I don't get into in this manuscript, in part because it was written in the middle of it, so it lacked any perspective on it. Nevertheless, in the middle of this profound and unprecedented for most of our lifetimes, mini civilizational collapse, we haven't actually had a full reckoning with the way in which our institutions and our understanding of ourselves and our communities and our interpersonal relationships sort of imploded on us. We haven't really reckoned with that. But in the middle of that, after about 3 months of berating the public that the highest possible good they could engage with is to keep to themselves and stay away from others, and if they had to venture out, then to observe a series of rituals and protocols. Then all of a sudden, all these voices turned on a dime and decided that the highest social good was to protest outside in the streets in an act of contrition. It was a big booming display of pursuit of absolution for things that you couldn't possibly absolve yourself of. The principle on display in that moment, and I'm talking about the way in which public health advocates affixed their name to an open letter that demanded you go outside and protest because racism is a public health emergency, perhaps even a greater public health emergency than the actual public health emergency. And it was that sort of principle on display that manifested itself in some serious ways, but also some very silly ways. So the protests were about combating police violence. And the unobjectionable principle is that local police authorities generally should be subordinate to the communities they serve and responsible to elected officials. That's a reasonable principle, one that is unimpeachable, frankly. But it was de-emphasized in the pursuit of rather silly ways that this could manifest. So one of those ways was the backlash against cop shows. We were told that the good cop archetype is something that could not and should not be allowed on television, in media generally. It resulted in the cancellation of programs like Cops and Live PD, shows that had done tangible good. They had found missing persons. They had solved cold cases. They had found felons at large. That tangible good was subordinated to a theory, the theory being that this good cop archetype had contributed to police abuses. The theory won out over the facts. And perhaps the silliest manifestation of this was a backlash against the Nickelodeon cartoon show Paw Patrol. It's a cartoon show featuring cartoon dogs as first responders. There's a New York Times article about the backlash against this show and how it was contributing to police violence. This silliness ultimately undermined the principle that was at work here, that police should be subordinate to the communities they serve. Instead, it seemed to be elevated above the principle. So we're left to conclude that it was the display of zealotry, this big booming pageant of zeal and self-sacrifice, because they're sacrificing their entertainment too. Not just you, them too. They're making this sacrifice for the greater good. But it was that sacrifice, it was this display of labor, the work, that was the ultimate objective here. The principle itself fell by the wayside, ultimately to be forgotten in favor of this big booming display of sanctimony.
You see this again and again. I mean, Disney's entire behavior, which has been astonishingly unprofitable. I mean, the amount they've cost their shareholders as people reacted negatively to their aggressively woke strategy is kind of an interesting comment on culture dominating economics.
Yeah, and so the commercial aspect of this is, I think, one of the ways it probably falls apart. I think this is encapsulated mostly in the phrase banned in Boston. Banned in Boston, again, back to the part of mainline Protestantism, the incubator of progressivism in America as we understand it. Banned in Boston was a phrase that warned of impure literature. The Comstockery of the time and the Society for the Suppression of Vice, which mobilized in response to a profound menace, Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman, was very effective. It effectively blocked the publication of that book in New England. It Baudelaireized plays. It banned dime store novels that are popular throughout the country. Songs couldn't be played on the radio in this area. And it was a very effective tool for warning the ethically and morally pure away from impious literature. But the backlash materialized around it, and it manifested in commercial ways, so that eventually Banned in Boston went from being a warning against impure literature to a powerful advertisement for it. Publishers actively sought to have their titles banned in Boston so that they could increase sales across the country. And I think if there's a modern parallel, it would be banned on Facebook, banned on Amazon. Because when conservative books find themselves in the crosshairs of 23-year-old censors who have no idea what they're doing and limit access to this material, it advertises it in ways that I don't think any PR campaign could accomplish. These books become bestsellers overnight only in response to the overshooting the mark of the censors on the left who would try to prevent you from having access to this very seditious, titillating material. So the commercial aspect is something you can't discount.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch because the extraordinary success of Top Gun Maverick, which was patriotic, positive, and has, you know, blown the doors off of everybody else in terms of people coming out to see it. It'll be interesting to see whether or not Hollywood can resist making money.
Right. The obstacle to that has been China, right? Access to the Chinese market has been more lucrative than Western markets. And this film, among others, but this film most prominently bucked that trend in a bold way and was rewarded for the gamble. So yeah, it would be interesting to see if anybody follows in their mark, but it was just a refreshing movie insofar as it didn't beat you over the head with this plotting didactic narrative meant to communicate whatever our contemporary sins are and might force you to think about things for a little bit.
Yeah, the country was actually interested in relaxing and being entertained and feeling patriotic.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But the combination is the three things you would say that the new Puritanism would oppose all three parts of it.
Yes, yes. I mean, in part because it's a waste of time. You are idle. You're actively not doing the work, which means you're actively being influenced in ways that they can't control, and that because they are mistrustful of you, there's an element of condescension to a lot of this, that they believe you to be rather easily influenced, poorly educated, morally infirmed. And if you are not constantly being berated with stimuli that reinforces the particular norms that they believe advance the progressive project and that cure us of the ills of the society into which we were born, this milieu in which we're steeped, which is corrupting. If you're not constantly being beaten over the head with that, you're steeping yourself in it. You're marinating in it, and you will eventually emerge a bad person as a result of that. That there's an education process that is unending. And if it ever does end, it ends, frankly, with you being a menace to your neighbors and to society and perpetuating the ills that you were born into in a flawed and imperfect union.
One of the things I was struck by, though I thought was particularly sobering, was that when you were conducting interviews with a number of professionals, you found a number who agreed with your premise but didn't share conservative politics. But you also found that there were a number who really didn't want to talk on the record, that they were genuinely concerned that if they told you how they really felt, that they would be risking their career or risking their status.
Yeah, well, they told me how they really felt. I just can't print their names. But yeah, I mean, there are real consequences, social and professional, and to a lesser degree legal, but still they're out there, for speaking your mind.
How much do you think this is a detour, and how much do you think it's potentially a really profound long-term change?
So that's an interesting question because I'm of two minds on it. I think the shift back towards a progressive ethos, away from a classically liberal or just liberal sort of, if it feels good, do it mentality, that sort of hedonism and licentiousness that typified the baby boomer generation after the sexual revolution, I think that was a passing fad. I think progressivism is here to stay. The kind of progressivism that manifests in this totalistic, puritanical program for society, I don't think that's long for this world. It is a cult of misery, and cults of misery do not have long shelf lives. It will leave its mark on American politics. It already has, and society, it already has left an indelible and in some ways laudable mark on the institutions it has trained its fire on. But like the Puritans, who are not remembered for all the great traditions they bequeathed us, the Puritans, big P Puritans, are remembered as stereotypes, many of which are laughable. They're laughingstocks. And I think, frankly, that this book is an attempt to hasten what I believe is already going to be an inevitable trend to finding the humor in the ways in which these people are making spectacles of themselves, sacrificing towards no end. I think that eventually we'll be able to laugh at them. We're not there yet, but I think it's coming.
You may have found the title for your next book in The Cult of Misery.
Ah, I am looking for another pitch. You got to strike while the iron's hot.
I think that is so intriguing and captures this very strange phenomenon. I was recently doing Sean Hannity's radio show, and we were exploring why would you say that oil produced in Texas and Pennsylvania and North Dakota is bad, but oil produced in Venezuela and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Russia is good. And I think it's part of this cult of misery. I mean, I think you have a phrase there that you could become very famous with.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to rush out and capitalize on this now, patent pending.
That's right. The trick is trademark it before anybody else thinks of it. It's great. Listen, I really appreciate you doing this. This has been fascinating. I think you've had some marvelous insights. We are certainly going to promote your book, which I think is a real contribution to understanding what's happening in America. And we're going to have the rise of the new Puritans fighting back against progressives' war and fun. We'll be on our show page with a link, and I hope it does extraordinarily well.
Mr. Speaker, thank you so much. It's been a privilege to talk to you, and I really appreciate your endorsement. That's very high praise.
Thank you to my guest, Noah Rothman. You can get a link to buy his new book, The Rise of the New Puritans, on our show page at NewtsWorld.com. NewtsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our producer is Rebecca Howell, and our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Lowe's knows home improvement. Lowe's, official sponsor for the 2024 NFL Draft.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.